This is Community Conversations, where we connect Harrisburg with home.
Hi, I'm State Representative Valerie Gatos. Welcome to my podcast. Today we have on a guest is Bob Thacker, and Bob is a 16-year board member of the Mid-Atlantic Association of Career Schools. So welcome, Bob. I appreciate you talking about the topic of career and career trades, technical education, and more. So tell me a little bit about your position and some of the projects you're working on.
Well, thank you for having me today, Valerie. It's nice to be here to chat with you a little bit about career and technical education. Sometimes we call it CTE for CTE. Short. That's just one of the little acronyms. I've been around career and technical education all of my life. I was a little boy when my dad introduced me to technical education, so I understood
What was the trade? What was the trade that he introduced you to?
Well, the trade is a very little-known trade called gunsmithing.
Ah.
And I'm associated with Pennsylvania Gunsmith School. And the school has been around since 1949, and we started to train World War II veterans back in 1949. And I am the third generation. My dad took it over from his uncle, and since 2008, I've taken it over from my dad when he passed away. So I've been around career and technical education all of my life, and had the good fortune of having every position in that school, from being a janitor to now being president, and then having the good fortune of being elected to a statewide organization that we originally called PAPSA, which is the Pennsylvania Association of Private Career Schools, but we changed to meet more of the career school demands regionally, and we became a regional association, and we now call it it's a tough acronym, it's MACS, M-A-A-C-S.
That's easy to...
it's easy for me to say and hard for you, but it stands for the Mid-Atlantic Association of Career Schools, and did that for 16 years as a board member, and we represented in a number of different states, from Virginia to New Jersey to Delaware to Pennsylvania to West Virginia, and I believe we had even one school way out in Missouri join us.
How many schools are in that association?
About 100, roughly, 100, and they're all career and technical schools. And they range anywhere from cosmetology schools through HVAC, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, to automotive, auto body, auto mechanics, welding, cybersecurity is a big one now.
Sure.
And, of course, gunsmithing. And, of course, we're one gunsmithing school, and there's only a few of us here in the nation, so we're kind of a rare breed, and it's right in your backyard. It's just right here.
Well, I was really surprised to hear from some of the trades that the age of some of the folks that are entering the trades are actually in their late 20s, because they were finding that they were directed to go to college or some other education, and they're finding out late, which is certainly better than ever, mm-hmm. never, that they should be going into the trades, that those are the opportunities for them, not only from a career path, because it is a career, but also learning a trade, and they're well-paying jobs, and you don't have the debt that you have when you're going to the other four-year traditional collegiate routes.
Well, there's no doubt about that. I mean, you said a lot there in just a couple of sentences. The average age at our school, at Pennsylvania Gunsmith School, is 27, if you can believe that. And we have a number of people that have dropped out of higher education and collegiate education and decided, nah, this is not my cup of tea. This is not exactly what I want to do. And they're also, and I think we as a nation are figuring out, too, that it's not necessary to spend that kind of money to make a reasonable living wage and a wage that's respectable. And depending upon the career path, those wages can be incredibly high in the trades. And then you don't have to pay all that student debt.
Well, and you're doing something really valuable with your hands. You see the real product of what you're producing. And frankly, that's kind of getting back to our roots of America, where people people were majorly productive. And we were just talking recently with somebody about that Pennsylvania was the greatest boat builder for a period of time. We've built for World War II right here on Neville Island. We built the LSTs. I mean, those we have been a region that has been just so strong in that. And I think it's really nice to see that we are beginning to get back to those roots.
Well, we're getting back to the roots, and at least our thought process is getting there. We're not totally where we need to be as a not only a community and a region, but nationally. We need to get back to more manufacturing, more service here especially in Pittsburgh area. We lost a lot of our mill jobs and our steel mills, but we haven't replaced it. We replaced some with tech, which is great. I mean, that's fine. We need a change. But there's so much to be offered in these skilled trades. And it does take a skilled education to do it. It's necessary to have the proper training, but you don't need to have all of those years of sitting in a classroom and hands-on. You mentioned hands-on. You know, so many people tell us, at least at our school, and I know it's typical in all of our career schools, whether it's cosmetology or it's welding or it's HVAC construction, is when you present a customer or a person that finished product and see their eyes light up and see that's priceless. You can't buy that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's a reward that you get.
You know, what's been a real challenge, though, what I've seen is that we don't have shop class anymore in schools, in high schools. We don't have home ec, those types of things, which perhaps give students a taste of what those opportunities are, and so they are forced to go through that collegiate route without been given opportunity to really work with their hands and do some trades.
Well, you know, I'm hearing that pendulum is changing too, which is interesting.
Yes, it is.
You should say that. We got rid of all of shop classes, the machines. The vocational schools sold all their equipment, and the guidance staff in our high school swung that pendulum to collegiate education, because the thought process was you need to be a doctor, lawyer, and that's how you made your big monies. But remember, it's supply and demand.
Yes.
So you have a shortage of electricians or a shortage of plumbers. What happens to wages? They go through the roof.
Yeah.
So we swung that pendulum, and I'm hearing now that there are some schools, I think even in the state of Pennsylvania, I'm hearing, are starting to think about vocational education in the schools.
Yes.
And our guidance counselors are realizing that, you know, college is not the route for every single person. It's for some people. Somebody wants to be a lawyer or an accountant or a doctor. We need those folks. You know,
but we're not giving them a career path. We just tell them that they have to go do that.
That's right.
And you and I spoke earlier about an anecdote of somebody who got a history degree, and they had no idea why they were getting that history degree or what the next step is. And I think that's what's also missing. There's nothing wrong with getting a history degree or an English degree as long as you know where you're going to get that job to pay for that degree. And I think that's where maybe our traditional schools have failed our kids, is that they just thought that they were magically just going to get a job. And we have to start thinking about what that next step is and what's the puck you're skating to, so to speak.
You know, I've heard statistics, and I don't, you made me think about this, but I heard somewhere that all of the people that entered collegiate education, there was a high percentage, and I don't remember the number, it was a very high percentage, did not land in their chosen career field. Now, there's another interesting story I didn't mention to you earlier. My daughter decided to attend a Pennsylvania college, and I asked the admissions director, things that we're asked and we're held accountable for are our graduation rates. We have to have a 70% graduation rate to maintain our accreditation, and we have to have a 70% placement rate. In other words, people getting a job as a result of the training. That's just one of the standards that we're held to. So I asked her, "What's your graduation rate?" And you know what her answer was? I don't know.
Oh.
So I says, okay, out of all of the people that graduate from the college, how many people get jobs in their chosen career field?
She said, I don't know.
And she says, no, I know.
Oh.
She said, I thought, oh, this is good. This is great. You're going to tell me, and my daughter's going to get a job in her chosen career field. She says, 100%. And I said, 100%? Really? You have that documented? Do you really? And she says, well, I don't know about documented. I said, where do these people go? And she says, 70% go on to get a master's degree.
Boy.
I said, excuse me? So you mean to tell me that of all of your graduates, only 30% of your graduates get a job in the chosen career field? And I'm thinking, we're held to accountability standards of 70?
That's a really important point to point out. That's absolutely incredible. And I think you're right that they're counting those as jobs when they're not. They're further education.
They're not.
And not to mention that those folks are getting into additional debt. They're not contributing to their families, retirements, that type of thing. It's very fascinating to see that all the folks who are in career and technical education, I also see that they are much happier.
They are. They love
happier.
What they're doing because they're working with, you said it earlier, they're working with their hands.
Yeah.
And it's fun to do, it's fun to build something with your hands, whether it's a house or you're welding a bridge. You're seeing tangible results of all of that.
So let's go back to, you're the president currently, you run the Pennsylvania Gunsmith School.
I do.
And so tell me about how many students you have in that, and what exactly are they doing, and what is the mission of the Gunsmith School?
Well, as I said, Pennsylvania Gunsmith School was formed back in 1949 to retrain the World War II veterans. And what's so interesting is that my great uncle was asked by the federal government to start career schools. Now they want to get rid of them.
Interesting.
So the thing has changed. But the objective was back then and is today, is to train people to be employed in the field of gunsmithing. And what is a gunsmith? A lot of people don't know what that is. What a gunsmith does, not only are they a machinist because they have the machine parts, they are a woodworker because they work on wood stocks or synthetic stocks. They have to be a troubleshooter. So they have to understand the synchronization of parts because some of these firearms are as intricate as an old style Swiss watch, like an old Rolex where they got all these parts in it. So they have to do that. They have to understand metal refinishing. And today, it's
there's a lot of coatings. There's a lot of...
Well, I was just going to say, there's ceramic coatings. You know, many people have heard of Cerakote. You put Cerakote on your car. You could put... It's a large U.S. company in Washington State, or is it Oregon? In any case, there's ceramic coating, and that is incredibly a specialty operation. And people love to have pink guns, or they want to have camouflage guns, or they want to have, you know, my daughter.
So they're artists as well.
They're artists. It's very artistic.
Now, how many students do you have in the Gunsmith School?
We have, on average, about 60 students. And our school is different. We're different than traditional education. It was started this way originally because we wanted to keep the training very focused on the person. The most important thing in any career education, and we do this in all of our career schools in the state, is we focus on the person instead of the outcome. Okay, what that means is we have about 60 students in school, but we enroll anywhere between 5 and 6 students per month, except July and December. So we'll have this small group, we call them a cohort of 5 or 6 students, and those 5 will work as a team. Now, you and I talked earlier about a lot of people don't have these team-building skills.
That's a whole other topic,
exactly. That's a topic for a whole different podcast, obviously. But the point is that we teach them team-building skills. So they work together in this group of 5 or 6, and they progress through 18 different courses together. But they'll move, and then the next month, another group will come in behind them. And we have a very synergistic classroom climate, and they all work together, but particularly they work in groups like that, and then they'll follow each through those 18 different courses.
So talk about where people go next. So after they go through the gunsmithing school, what are typically their career placement after that, and what do they do?
Well, as I said, we have a smooth average of about 74%, I believe, is over a 5-year period, and that's a verified average. That's verified by employers. That's not saying, okay, check the box because I think you work there. No, it's a verified. The employers verify. That's a pretty high number, specifically when typical Community colleges are placing about 34-35% of their people, and so it's a big disparate treatment. And community colleges serve a different a group, and that's a different podcast in itself. But in any case, they work in their last semester, the last one-fourth of the program, they work with our career services director. And Maria has and does all of our career services, which is a big part of it is job placement. And I think the last I heard the other day is she has 21 open positions around the nation.
Wow.
Which is good. And the reason that's good is because we draw about 75% of our students from out of the area. So we're what's called a destination institution. People come to this, our school as a destination, live here, then go back home. So
interesting.
They're going back to their jobs. Now, where do they get jobs? Well, now DHS is one, Secret Service, FBI, CIA. They work for contractors, not so much anymore, but there were a lot, if you remember back in Gulf 1, Gulf 2, and Afghanistan, there were a lot of different contractors over in the Middle East. There was a lot of them, and those were incredibly high-paying jobs. I mean, those were six digits plus.
But they were also exactly in certain environments that were...
Well, they were getting shot at. Okay, I mean, they were in a very hostile zone, so that obviously the pay was indicative of that. That's not so much anymore. It's still there. We've had people in the movie industry. Well, you saw the recent
incident,
issue,
yep.
Yeah, that happened in Hollywood. That was done by an untrained person. That was the what they call the armor. And there's a difference between armor and a gunsmith. Armor is a parts changer, and a gunsmith is a customizer and spoilerizer. But anyway, bottom line is that's another area that they go to. Or there are some very, very high-end gun manufacturers. There's two that come to my mind are Kolar in Racine, Wisconsin, and Krieghoff in Ottsville, Pennsylvania. That's kind of on the other end of the state. One's a German company, one's a U.S. company. Kolar's a U.S. company. But they sell very, very high-end guns to, obviously, people that can afford them. They're generally, Kolar starts, their shotgun started about $5,000 to $7,500. Mm. Krieghoff starts, bottom line, is $15,000. And that's usually, they're usually used for the clay target business, whether it's skeet, trap, different games, and sporting clays. So they can work for a company like that. And those aren't the only two companies. There's others. Plus, they can work in a repair facility for Colt or Smith & Wesson or Remington or places like that. But predominantly, the greatest employment, now, those are maybe 25 to 30% of the graduates roughly go in that area. The other go into small mom-and-pop places where there are gun shops that are relatively small, where they might have a family-run sporting goods store where they bring in someone to do this kind of work, because a gunsmith work can really bring in additional revenue to that store and to that to those owners that own that store.
As a legislator, part of our job is to make sure that our economy is running smoothly. We try to eliminate as many challenges as possible, not create them, even though sometimes government, as we said, creates those challenges. What are some of the things that we could do in the legislature that could help the career and technical education area?
Well, I think the best thing that you could do is to continue to recognize those industries. And also, over the past few years, FHEA, Pennsylvania Higher Education Assistance Agency, has been the one administering the Pennsylvania State Grant Program. That is that's only for Pennsylvania residents. Incredible program. I would say continue to fund that for our Penn. That would fuel not only the local economy, but the regional economy as well. And also, they started, I believe it's not associated with FHEA, but it's called the PA Forward program.
Yes.
It's a loan program. Fantastic.
That's been
program.
Terrific.
Where they have relatively good interest rates. Continue to foster that, but also to, when you talk to different people, just to foster career and technical education.
Right. We need to change the narrative to show and demonstrate that these jobs are not only just needed and wanted, but they are absolutely the strength of our region. So Bob, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on this podcast. One last question. Tell me a little bit about yourself, and tell me something about yourself that we might not have known.
Well, I'll tell you two different things that you might not have known. So few people know. I've been very, very fortunate to be a trainer for Dale Carnegie Training here in Western Pennsylvania. And I did a little bit on a national basis, did that for 37 years. Right now, I do a little bit of executive coaching, and that's been a lot of fun. But the one thing that a lot of people don't know is I'm a third-degree black belt. I enjoy working out and having fun in martial arts. And I had to stop martial arts because I had to have a hip replaced. So that journey came to an end. So I have to find something else that is it's going to keep me active. So there's a couple of things.
Well, then, no, that's very interesting. I appreciate you sharing that with us, because I think that there are a lot of things that we don't know about individuals. You know, we may associate you with the Gunsmith School or career and technical education, but I think all of our lives are much broader than maybe sometimes the first thing that people see. So I appreciate all the work that you've done, Bob, and thanks for being on the show.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you.